Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The U.S. Men's College Basketball Championship Tournament reaches its Final Four stage this weekend in Houston, Texas. In the first semifinal Saturday evening, Villanova will play Oklahoma, and that will be followed by a game between North Carolina and Syracuse. Len Elmore was an All-American basketball player at the University of Maryland more than 40 years ago. He then turned professional, playing his first 2 years in the now defunct ABA and then 8 more seasons in the NBA. Len has also accomplished much off the basketball court. After his playing days ended, Elmore earned his law degree from Harvard Law School, and he practices law in New York City. In addition, Len works as a TV basketball analyst for CBS and ESPN, and he joins us now by telephone from New York. Len, welcome back to the sunny side of sports.
Happy to be here.
Len, I understand you're going to be in Houston.
Yeah, I'm going to check out the Final Four. It's always entertaining, nice little family vacation. One of my sons, who's a basketball coach in one of the smaller schools, is attending, and my wife and I always enjoy being in that environment.
I also understand you'll be debating in Houston.
You would bring that up, wouldn't you? Well, yeah, I am kind of representing a viewpoint that is the antithesis of paying players for play in college basketball, recognizing that there's an awful lot of value already being imparted if we just focus on it, and that straight cash for playing establishes kind of an employer-employee relationship, which is detrimental to the whole cause of leadership development and utilizing college sports as part of that mission in the overall plan for colleges to be able to teach, particularly student-athletes. I think it's a shame that people can't take a look at room, board, books, tuition, the stipends that close the gap between those benefits and the real cost of education, the medical benefits, some of the other perks that, when quantified, and are significant. And when you add in the fact that the average student, about 71% more than the average student, leaves college with at least $30,000 of debt. College athletes have an education, get a degree, and have no debt to speak of when they leave. I think that's a pretty good bargain.
Let's take a look at the matchups on Saturday in Houston, Len. I know two of your teams made it to the Final Four. Last week you said you had Oklahoma and North Carolina in your Final Four. North Carolina playing Syracuse. A lot of people picking the Tar Heels now, Len, to win it all, a sixth national title. What do you think of the Tar Heels?
Well, I think that's reasonable to be able to pick them. In this game against Syracuse, I played Syracuse twice this year, beat them by an average of about 8 points, and really dominated the paint. North Carolina's depth up front is really something that tips the scale when they play most teams. Also, they've created a lot of turnovers on the part of Syracuse and scored off those turnovers and did just a terrific job defensively against Syracuse, who from beyond the arc, Trevor Cooney's the only one really knocking any shots down. The rest of the team in the two games against Carolina shot 22% from beyond the arc. So I think it's really the depth of Carolina and, you know, the quality of their play, the pace that should help them. But, you know, you can't count on a team like Syracuse that is so confident right now. They're riding as high as you possibly can. After that win against Virginia, where they came back from 16 down in the last 9 minutes of the game to beat them, that's one thing in a one-game situation that there's no accounting for. I still think reasonable money, if you will be on Carolina, but that doesn't mean that Syracuse doesn't have a chance.
Len, getting to that comeback by the Orange of Syracuse, how much credit do you give Coach Boeheim for switching to a pressing type of defense?
I think that was a good decision. Obviously, Virginia turned the ball over far too often. Almost appeared as though they weren't prepared for Syracuse applying pressure. Although, whenever you're in the league, you have to know that the other guy, particularly in this tournament, that the other guy is going to have to come out with some type of full court or three-quarter court pressure. Syracuse, with their length, their athleticism and determination, obviously forced the turnovers that they needed. And on the other end, able to convert those turnovers into points. I was really surprised at Virginia's lack of an answer for that pressure down the stretch.
You were mentioning academics and getting degrees, Len. I know there's kind of this controversy hanging over North Carolina's program. Do they have extra motivation to win, maybe, because of these NCAA allegations against them about these sort of bogus courses some of the players have taken?
I would say that if they need that to motivate them to win a national championship, there's something severely wrong with that program. I don't think it's added motivation. I also believe that, you know, for the seniors, this is a chance for them to go out on top. When you look at Bryce Johnson, you look at Marcus Page particularly, they've had stellar careers, and, you know, they want to be able to leave with a national championship ring. By the same token, the underclassmen are the ones who probably in the back of their minds realize that, considering that academic fraud charge and the potential of sanctions, that this may be the last time for a long time that North Carolina will have a shot at a national championship. So from that standpoint, that might be a little bit more motivation.
The opening game in Houston on Saturday, Len, the Wildcats of Villanova going up against the Sooners of Oklahoma. How do you see that game?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say, really. I mean, the first game these two teams met back in December, Oklahoma dominated Villanova, really shut them down from beyond the arc. Villanova only scored 55 points. In this tournament alone, they're averaging over 80 points, I believe. But during that period of time early, Oklahoma was able to step out, guard Villanova, match their quickness and their toughness. They did a pretty good job on everyone from beyond the arc. It was just an amazing display of solid defense. I think it was the worst or tied for the worst, the lowest number of points Villanova scored. Their field goal percentage, three-point percentage, they were 4 for 32 from the field. We know Villanova wins with the three. As far as Oklahoma's concerned, Buddy Hield didn't have a good game in that last game either, but other guys stepped up as Buddy Hield was defended by four or five guys. In the end, I think it's still going to come down to being able to knock down threes if you're Villanova and not turn the ball over. And if you're Oklahoma, other people have to contribute besides Buddy Hield. I expect this to be a pretty high-scoring basketball game.
Thanks, Len. That's basketball analyst and former NCAA and NBA player Len Elmore. And Len was speaking with us by telephone from New York City. And we'll hear more from Len during Friday's Sunny Side of Sports. Meanwhile, Houston is not just the venue for the Final Four in U.S. men's college basketball this coming weekend. The Texas City is also hosting some world-class professional golf. Reporter John Brooks has this preview for us of the Shell Houston Open.
With number two-ranked Jordan Spieth and six others of the top 12 world-ranked golfers in the field, the Masters preview, better known as the Shell Houston Open, begins Thursday morning at the Golf Club of Houston. Number 5, Ricky Fowler, with 6 of his last 8 worldwide starts, resulting in top 10 finishes, is another bright light in the field. Number 7, ranked Henrik Stenson, has had top 11 finishes in 4 of his last 5 starts, and he loves the layout on this Reese Jones course, having been in the top 3 in 2 of the past 4 years. Number 9, Dustin Johnson, and South African Brendan Grace at number 12 are other red-hot names in the field. And, of course, the guy who loves the place more than anyone, most likely, Phil Mickelson, can't be counted out, having been in the top 17 spots, including a championship in his past 5 Shell appearances. Defending champion J.B. Holmes is back to defend his crown after defeating Spieth and Johnson Wagner in a 3-way playoff last year. 33 players in the 164-player field will be prepping one final time for next week's Masters, including an unlikely recent winner from last week and little-known Tony Finau, who captured the Puerto Rico Open while the majority of attention was focused on the Dell Match Play Championship won by Jason Day, who will not be here in Houston this week. But the most eyes will be on Spieth, who went from a playoff loser here last year to Masters champion a week later, and will definitely be hoping the karma returns, since he doesn't have a top 15 finish since January when he won the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. This is the 25th Shell, making this the third longest sponsored stop on the tour and featuring an all-time high purse of $6.8 million, with $1.2 million of that going to the winner. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm John Brooks at the Shell Houston Open in Texas.
Voice of America.
More sports news? We're here to fulfill your wishes on VOA Africa. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Our African football guru, David Legg, has been going group by group, looking at the recent Nations Cup qualifying matches played across the continent. This evening, David turns his attention to Group G.
Because of the withdrawal of Chad, they claim they just don't have the money to carry on competing in the competition. It's now a 3-team group. So the runners-up situation no longer applies in this group. In the first match in Kaduna, in a stadium that was vastly overcrowded, it was Nigeria 1, Egypt 1. And in the second match in Alexandria, it was Egypt 1, Nigeria 0. Let me say straight out, Sonny, that Nigeria were robbed of victory in Kaduna. They were much the better side, but they just did not take their chances, particularly in the second half. And Moses rounded the goalkeeper with 6 minutes left, but the ball was miraculously cleared off the line. And then in stoppage time, Nigeria committed a most fundamental of errors. They did not play to the whistle. They stopped believing that Mohamed Salah was offside. He wasn't offside, and he raced through to score the equalizer a minute into stoppage time. It was real heartbreak for the Nigerians. I would have said, Sonny, a 2-0 victory for the Super Eagles in that match in Kaduna would have been a fair result. I also want to strongly criticize, Sonny, the authorities who allowed free entry to this match in Kaduna. What emerged was that a stadium that only accommodates 25,000 spectators, there were actually 40,000 people in that ground. And needless to say, if anything whatsoever had gone wrong, a fight or somebody was injured or somebody had to be evacuated, we could have seen hundreds of lives lost. I'm not sure whether it's the football authorities or the state government or even the federal government who are responsible for this decision, but it was definitely the wrong one. Africa has got to learn the lessons from Accra Sports Stadium and also from Ellis Park Stadium, where several hundred people died because of poor crowd control. What should have happened with this game, we knew it was a blockbuster. We knew months ago that this match would be played towards the end of March. It should have been an all-ticket affair, and nobody who did not have a ticket should have got anywhere near that ground in Kaduna. On from Kaduna, Sonny, to Alexandria, the ancient Mediterranean city. And here, Egypt's winning with a goal from Sobi after 56 minutes. Inside the box, a shot that took a deflection past the Nigerian goalkeeper. Again, Moses was unlucky. He hit the woodwork with 4 minutes left, and then the ball trickled agonizingly across the unguarded goal, but went out of play on the far side. So Nigeria had their chances. Again, a game that produced a 1-0 victory, but could easily have ended in a 1-1 draw. And what all this means, sadly for Nigerians, is their team are out. For the third time in four Cup of Nations, Nigeria will not grace the finals. They didn't qualify in 2012. They won the competition in 2013. They failed to qualify in 2015. And now again in 2017, they failed to qualify. Egypt, on the other hand, Sonny, they're almost there. They've got 7 points. Nigeria have got 2, but they can only reach a maximum of 5. And Tanzania mathematically still have a chance. They've got 1 point from 2 games. They would have to beat Egypt convincingly at home and then go to Nigeria and win there too. And then it would come down to a head-to-head decision between Egypt and Tanzania. Trust me, Sonny, it ain't going to come to head-to-head. The record 7 times champions Egypt, who have failed to qualify for the last 3 tournaments, are back in business. They're going to be in Gabon in 2017, but sadly, Nigeria will not be there.
Let's go to Group H now, David. And how about the results?
The results, Sonny, Mozambique 0, Ghana 0. That was in Maputo. And then in Kigali, Rwanda 5, Mauritius 0. No real surprises here. I did have the unfortunate experience of having to watch Mozambique and Ghana. I'm very seldom harsh on African football because most games bring a lot of pleasure to a lot of people. But this was a sleep-inducing affair, a shocking game. It was hard to believe that Ghana, just last year, were the runners-up in the Africa Cup of Nations. The only excuse for the Ghanaians is they had to make a long trip down to Mozambique for the return match after winning 3-1 at home. And they're comfortably on top of this group. They've got 10 points. Rwanda and Mauritius have got 6 each, and Mozambique have got 1. Unfortunately for Rwanda, despite this big 5-0 win over Mauritius, they did lose the first meeting of the two teams 1-0 away, and that really has upset them as far as their ambitions of finishing one of the best 2 second-place teams. They've got 6 points. I think they could get up to 9 points. I cannot see them winning in Ghana, and that may well cost them a place in the finals in Gabon. But Ghana looking very confident in this group, but not a good performance in Mozambique.
Now we turn to Group I, David. And how about the results?
Just 2 results, Sonny, because this is a 3-team group. In Abidjan, it was Ivory Coast 1, Sudan 0. And then the return match in Khartoum, Sudan 1, Ivory Coast 1. Ivory Coast, Sonny, are making pretty heavy weather of winning this group against Sudan and Sierra Leone, who are not exactly powerhouses of African football. The Ivorians have got 5 points. The Sudanese, who have exceeded expectations, have got 4. And Sierra Leone have got 1. It is a group I fancy Ivory Coast will win. They've still got a host, Sierra Leone, in their final match. But nevertheless, to score 2 goals in 2 games against Sudan, a side very lowly ranked at the moment in Africa. Gervinho scored the winner in Abidjan, and in the return match, Gradel, back after a long injury absence, he put the elephants ahead, and then the equalizer for the Sudanese came from Tahir. So it's a 1-0 draw in Khartoum that I think will give a lot more satisfaction to the Sudanese than it will to the Ivorians. But that said, Sonny, it looks like Group I will be won by the Ivorians.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Andrew, what's trending in the sports world on this Thursday?
Well, we have this video on Twitter. Now, this is the top Twitter moment, period. Not just top sports moment, because Twitter has a series of moments that they kind of compile different tweets. Okay. This is the top moment right now, period. And it's this U.S. weightlifter, Maddie Rogers. She's 20 years old. She's trying to qualify for the Rio Olympics. And she had a video, a little, you know, her camera phone set up. She was taking a video of her trying to lift this massive weight. And she wasn't able to lift it. She drops it. It rolls off the platform where she's standing. And you see her try to run after it, go out of the frame of the video. And all of a sudden, you just hear a smash. You hear a window smashing. And what happened was that when she dropped this weight, it rolled and smashed through this huge window in the front of the training center.
Oh, my.
So that video quickly went viral on social media. Lots of people sharing that. And she tweeted out, she said, "Break records? Who cares? Break a window? Newsworthy. World goes crazy. What a time to be alive." So, again, these things sometimes are just these viral moments in all subjects, but especially in sports. You kind of see, you know, the half-court shots or those, you know, kind of momentous things, or in this case, a momentous fail, perhaps.
So she might not win a medal in Rio, and yet she's already become world famous.
Exactly. And that's, so that's her joke, that she smashed records, but she smashes a window and becomes famous. But then a couple of people actually tweeted back at her and said, "You know, I actually now at least know who you are. I know more about the sport." So it did actually give you some good publicity. You know, they say all publicity is good publicity. So some people saying it's getting your name out there, even if it's because you smashed a window, at least now people know who you are and they're going to maybe watch you. And if she does make it to Rio, and I hope she does, I have no doubt that when she's competing, they're going to replay this video during the competition and say, "This is where it all started, when she smashed this window."
Possibly even pick up some corporate sponsorship on her road to Rio.
Maybe like Gorilla Glass or something like that, like some kind of some anti-break glass or plexiglass or something.
Andrew, what else is trending?
Well, we have this gentleman who lives in Syracuse, New York. James Kiki is his name. The good news for him is that he has the top bracket right now in Yahoo.com's bracket challenge. So he entered a bracket and he said he'd never done it before. Said, "Let me pick, you know, some teams," threw in a bracket.
This is for the basketball.
For the NCAA men's basketball championship, which the final's coming up this Monday. So he threw in the bracket, made his picks. Well, it turns out he has the top bracket in the contest and would have won $50,000 for having the top bracket. But the bad news for him is that he forgot to pick a winner.
Oh, no.
So he has Villanova and North Carolina in the national championship, but he didn't pick a winner between those two teams. And so they said he's not going to win because he won't have enough points by not picking a winner. In fact, they said that out of the top 30, there were several that forgot to pick a winner. They said it wasn't very intuitive when you click through and you click on this bracket on Yahoo.com to try to see where the winner is and select the winner. So
our friend David Legg in Johannesburg has an expression, Andrew. I think it might apply to our friend in Syracuse: snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
That is absolutely applicable here. And it's funny because James Kiki, he's a South Sudanese refugee. He said he had never participated before, just, you know, threw some picks in there and got so close, but so far. So a lot of people, social media is saying, if you think you're having a bad day, at least you're not James Kiki, because he got very close to winning $50,000 and then couldn't close a deal because he didn't pick a winner. Now, interestingly, this actually happened a couple years ago. There was somebody who picked UConn and Kentucky, which were the surprise picks. UConn was a 7 seed. I think Kentucky was an 8 seed. Surprising picks. Virtually nobody picked them except for this one guy, and he forgot to pick the winner out of those two. So it has happened before. So James Kiki hopefully doesn't feel like he's all alone. It has other people have made the same mistake, but you know, some other people on social media saying, "Oh, what a nitwit," or, you know, "How dumb of him." But a lot of people giving him a lot of sympathy and saying,
"That's good.
That's just awful. And I wouldn't want to be in his shoes."
Is the Final Four trending, Andrew, as we look forward to a big weekend in Houston, Texas?
It is. There's a lot of talk about who might make it to that national championship. As James Kiki predicted, Villanova and North Carolina. North Carolina is the only 1 seed left, so a lot of people putting their bets on North Carolina Tar Heels. But James Kiki now says, since he is from Syracuse and Syracuse has made an astonishing run to the Final Four as a 10 seed, he says now, "Well, I can root for Syracuse to get the upset and I won't have to worry about my bracket being busted." So, but, you know, you have the Syracuse fans that are hoping for the upset. You have the North Carolina fans that are hoping they can ride that number 1 seed all the way to victory. So we will see on Monday night. who indeed wins. And we'll see on Saturday who gets to the national championship game after those final four games.
Andrew Palcheski, VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew, and I'll see you on Friday.
Sounds good.
And that wraps up the March 31st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Justin Thwaites, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For the first time, the United States is working with the naval forces of Gulf of Guinea nations in a joint exercise to improve the region's preparedness and capability to combat piracy, narcotics trafficking, and other maritime threats. The combined exercise, Oban Game Saharan Express 2016, was officially launched on March 17, 2016, at Senegalese National Marine Naval Base by authorities of the participating and observing countries. Cameroon is the official host of the exercise, with elements of the exercise taking place in other participating countries. The northernmost hub of the exercise, Senegal, was chosen to host the opening ceremony. The ceremony was presided over by U.S. Embassy Chargé d'Affaires Sandra Clark, Chief of Staff of the Senegalese Navy Rear Admiral Chekbar Osisoko, and the Commander U.S. 6th Fleet Vice Admiral James Fogo. Exercise Oban Game Saharan Express is a multinational maritime exercise sponsored by U.S. Africa Command and facilitated by U.S. Naval Forces Europe Africa U.S. 6th Fleet that brings together African, European, South American, and U.S. forces, part of a global network of navies, to enhance cooperation and expertise in maritime security operations. The exercise will take place throughout the Gulf of Guinea and will have land-based maritime operations centers throughout the region. In the past, Oban Game Express and Saharan Express were separate exercises that took place in different areas of West Africa. This year, they have been combined to increase capacity building for more partners across West Africa. There are 27 participating nations in Oban Game Saharan Express 2016. Angola, Benin, Belgium, Brazil, Cameroon, Cabo Verde, Côte d'Ivoire, Democratic Republic of Congo, Denmark, Equatorial Guinea, France, Gabon, Germany, Ghana, Morocco, the Netherlands, Nigeria, Portugal, Republic of Congo, Sao Tome and Principe, Senegal, South Africa, Spain, Togo, Turkey, United States, and the United Kingdom, as well as the Economic Community of West African States and the Economic Community of Central African States. This Oban Game Saharan Express 2016 exercise ended with a symposium in Douala, Cameroon. The United States is proud to work with its international partners to keep the seaways to Africa open and safe for the benefit of all the peoples of Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Tuesday on Health Chat. Host Lenore Modu talks about autism, still an ailment with no known specific cause and no known cure yet. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOA News. VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.